This episode of Playing Doctor Podcast brought to you by Adipose. Just 2 tablets a day for 3 weeks and the fat just walks away. Adipose, at your finer pharmacist and druggist.
Jenny,
and we're Playing Doctor. Playing Doctor is our weekly Doctor Who podcast where we watch and discuss an episode of Doctor Who every week, which would mean that's why it's weekly.
Yes.
Yeah. This is, what, 8 episodes, and I still
can't get it right.
The introduction.
That's why I let you do it, and not me.
It's a podcast. We do it every week. It's on the iTunes. It's on the RSS feed if you want it.
All over the interwebs.
I'm actually looking at the whole Stitcher Radio thing, trying to figure that nonsense out.
Fancy.
I just don't know if anybody uses it. Maybe if people would like send us comments or comments on the webpage and tell us if Stitcher is something they're interested in,
that
it would
be
encourage
very
me to go and do that extra.
Yes.
Extra stuff.
Because you need more things to do.
Yes. Because 6 podcasts a week isn't enough.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll keep you busy.
But this is a podcast about Doctor Who. And we usually discuss the new episodes from, well, the new the revived series started in 2005 with Chris Eccleston and Billy Piper as the Doctor and Rose.
But we're not going to do that this week.
No, we are going to cross the time streams like we promised in the first episodes.
Yes, we're going to go back to 1970.
Polyester bell bottoms and wide leisure suit collars.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Maybe a velour jacket or two. Crushed velvet, something like that.
Good for disco.
It's kind of like, you know, after the summer of love, but before the whole 70s hippie thing took over.
This is way before disco.
Okay. But yeah, we're going to be talking about the 7th season of the classic Doctor Who series, first episode. So this is
John Pertwee.
First appearance of John Pertwee.
And this one's called Spearhead from Space!
So, this is kind of unique. It was the first episode that they filmed in color for the Doctor Who series. They got a new logo.
Oh, that's right, they did.
This was the introduction of an actual logo as opposed to...
like just Times New Roman slapped up on the screen?
Yeah, that was... I mean, the previous two Doctors had just font titles.
Yeah.
This one had, it was a font title more or less, but it was stylized.
Right. And they kind of had a new intro too, like it wasn't the same, just kind of, well, it was kind of just weird shapes, but it was different weird shapes than before.
Right. And plus, you know, they probably had to do that since it was in color.
Right.
We also, other than meeting John Pertwee for the first time, who's kind of a rugged old dude, we meet, well, we bring back UNIT that first appeared a couple of years back with the second Doctor.
Yeah, with one of the very popular characters, the Brigadier.
The Brigadier. And he's back in this, Brigadier Alistair Gordon Lethbridge-Stewart.
And we also meet the new companion, who is Liz Shaw, played by Caroline John. And I just have to say, I love this character.
Oh, Liz Shaw?
Yeah, I really do.
I mean, she... for a woman in the 1970s, I think you see a lot of that. I don't want to say the feminism movement, but whenever the older characters make some comment about her being a woman, like, oh, that's nice, a woman doing something. She, you know, reacts to it. It's just like, what the
f-? I think even at some point she says, you know, I'm not just a pretty face.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I really love that. I love her character. She's a strong female character without being like... having to come on the screen and actually say, I am a strong female character.
She just does it.
Yeah.
She just is.
And I just want to say, this is one of the first classic episodes that I ever watched. After I watched all of the, after I watched all the newer episodes, I wanted to go back and obviously start watching some of the classic ones. And I said, well, you know, I really like Sarah Jane, which we'll meet, you know, we'll meet her later on. So I wanted to see how she gets introduced and everything. So I was like, well, I might as well start with John Pertwee since she comes in this era. And this is kind of where I started.
Okay.
So I think it's kind of nice that we're starting here with this one, too, because it kind of ties in well with the 2005 series.
Well, yeah, because we've already discussed in our first podcast or first episode of this podcast the Autons, which mm-hmm. were the villains in the first episode of the revived series,
yes,
were introduced in this episode.
Right.
In the nesting consciousness.
Yeah, so it's really cool that they kind of brought it all back together for 2005. And that's one of the things I really liked about the newer series is that they brought back a lot of the old villains and a lot of the old characters without making it so that they were brand new, but it wasn't just a rehash of the old stuff either.
Right. Well, you didn't really have to see any of this, you know, of the original stuff to catch up with the new stuff.
Right.
You could just start with the new... You could watch just Doctor Who starting in 2005
mm-hmm.
and be fine.
Yeah.
But what I've found a lot of people, or what happens with a lot of people, is they watch all of... You know, they get caught up to whatever point with the new series, and then they run out.
And then you want more.
And you want more. And
more.
You can wait 18 months until another season starts. Or you can go back to the classic Doctor Who stuff, which
right.
there's a lot of them on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be like a 200 gigabyte torrent that floated around, but you know, since all the restrictions have started getting really strictly enforced, that's a little harder to come by.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these are on DVD,
mm-hmm.
and you can catch a lot of them on YouTube.
Yeah, you can get some on YouTube, or if you just go on Google, I think I saw some on Daily Motion or something mm-hmm. like that. But if you just search for it on Google, you usually can find the episode.
Right. I actually spent an evening watching classic episodes because somebody had made a playlist.
Oh, on YouTube?
On YouTube, back when they had the 10-minute limit.
Yeah.
And so they just went ahead, and so I wouldn't have to get up, start the next one, get up, start the next one.
Right.
I was able to just go full screen, start the playlist, and then just run through, I think, like 5 classic episodes, which,
oh, wow.
you know, at 4... Because this show, like this show, or Spearhead from Space, is actually 4 parts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was originally aired over a 4-week period as mm-hmm. 25 minutes episode. So you'd have a 25-minute episode, and then next week was part
right.
2, 25-minute episode. Next week was part 3, 25-minute episode. So it's actually like a 2-hour thing.
Well, it ends up being, this one is a little bit shorter than some of the other ones, which are 5 episodes long.
Mm-hmm.
And this one ends up being... not a whole lot longer than, you know, just one of the newer regular episodes.
Mm-hmm. I would think it was almost like a 2-parter.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
about the length of a 2-part. If you watched, you know, all 80 minutes or 85 minutes or whatever of 2-part episode.
Right.
Because they're about 40-something minutes
yeah,
each.
Yeah, so that works out to be about the same.
Okay, so Liz Shaw is, you know, coming out of Cambridge University,
mm-hmm.
right? So units basically drafted her because she's an expert on meteorites. She's got, I guess, what'd you say, degrees in medicine and physics.
Yeah, and among several others, according to what I read. So I don't know
right.
what else.
Maybe. So she's smart.
Yeah,
she,
communications, master communications.
Those come in handy when you're fighting, you know, mysterious menaces
mm-hmm.
and zombies.
Yeah.
Which I don't think the Doctor's taken on.
Not yet.
Okay. No, it's coming up. We already reviewed that. The Unquiet Dead. The zombies with Dickens.
Oh, right. Okay, well, I guess you could consider those zombies.
Yeah, they were the undead walking. Anyway, though, there's not in this episode. This episode, we've got meteorites falling to Earth.
Yeah.
Because when the episode starts, we've got some unit soldier sitting in his radar booth.
Oh, yeah, that sweaty British guy.
Right. Now, the female officer that comes in does mention that there's been like a heat wave or something.
Right.
So, you know, but they kind of play that, you know, but I think it was like too much about why are these people sweating?
Nobody else was sweating like that one guy.
No, the creepy old guy did too.
Well, yeah, but he's a creeper.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with that guy.
But now, before we get too far into it, this was filmed on location.
Yeah, and I guess there was a strike or something going on at the time.
Right.
So they had to do it all on film, which I guess was kind of odd. The production value of this was pretty low compared to some of the other episodes. I mean, not just like the weird special effects or rubber suits or whatever, but like they would be filming in an echoey room with,
and,
you know,
and the sound quality would get pretty bad.
Yeah, and it was very hard to hear a couple times.
Well,
so,
there was a scene where the Brigadier walks out into a hall.
Yeah,
and he's talking to Liz when he first greets her, and you can barely hear what he's saying because he's walked out into the hall and they just apparently have one boom mic
behind him
trying to get all of this.
Yes. But apparently this was filmed at BBC Wood Norton, and I was like, what is this place? So I looked it up, and it was an estate home that was sold. It dates back to medieval times, but it was sold to the BBC in the 30s, I believe, and they started using it as kind of an outpost for their like emergency situations in case of, you know, something happened to their London headquarters in World War II.
Like Nazis dropping stuff out of the sky.
Exactly. Which we will see in a couple episodes coming out too.
Okay.
But they, you know, they had all these things, you know, where they could switch over to this station and just, you know, start doing emergency broadcasting. But, you know, I don't know how much of some of this stuff was conspiracy, but this one website says that there's, like, nuclear bunkers underneath of it and all this kind of, like, kind of weird stuff.
Okay.
And they had all these things that I guess they prepared for just in case something did happen. They had programming set up, like, they were going to play The Sound of Music. That's apparently what they, you know, people would want to watch. If
to keep calm and carry on.
Yes.
After the Armageddon begins.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, speaking about the filming, though, one of the things that you'll notice when you watch a lot of the old episodes is that exterior scenes are going to be filmed, interior scenes are going to be videotaped.
Right.
And it makes this weird, almost jarring kind of cut between the two.
Yeah.
Because you'll have, like, scenes where they're outside and the film looks one way, and then when it cuts inside, the videotape... Just, I don't know if it's the texture of the picture or whatever.
The color's a little different. You know, just everything's just a little different about it.
And a lot of people, I mean, nowadays might not recognize that difference. But if you watch some of these older shows, you'll see the film quality or the quality of the picture changes drastically.
Yes.
Between interior shots and exterior. And with the scene shifter strike going on, this had to almost entirely be filmed on location. Like we said, it was all on film. Well, that means that this is... the only episode of Doctor Who, excluding the 1996 movie,
right.
That was done entirely on film.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the only classic Doctor Who episode that could potentially be made Blu-ray.
Oh, okay.
Because it's all on film.
That's pretty
cool. Like how they cleaned up the Star Trek master films and upgraded it to Blu-ray, you would...
They could always put the videotape into the machine and do some, you know, jiggery pokery, and
I don't know. And I didn't know that about the revive series, the 2005 episodes. All of that is done on videotape, and then it's processed to look like film.
Right. It wasn't until I want to say like 2008, 2009 that they started, you know, recording it to be able to go into high def.
Right.
Because, in fact, I think they redesigned the TARDIS and everything right at the very... One particular episode is the first time you can see it in high def. Before that, they were recording it on videotape, and then they switched
to the high def.
Yeah, they switched to high def. And it was, like, one episode right near the very end of David Tennant's run.
Okay. But this, you know, back to the 1970s now, this starts out, like we said, with the sweaty British guy, and they tried to play it off as a heat wave, but I don't get it because the creepy old guy is wearing a tweed jacket and sweating.
Right.
But the unit officer is watching stuff fall out of space.
Yeah, there's these meteors, and I guess they're seeing them on the radar come in. It's shaped like a spearhead, hence the title, Spearhead from Space.
Ooh. That could be it.
So, but these meteorites, they're not regular meteors. It's not a chunk of rock, because the sweaty old guy in the forest finds one, and it's like this plastic thing that's left a smoking crater in the ground, and it's flashy and glowy, and it kind of looks like something that you would give to your kid to play with.
It almost looks like a half-deflated soccer ball.
Yeah. Yeah, kind
of. Or football.
That has little LED lights glowing inside of it.
So if you took a football... Took the air out, put some LEDs in it, put a little bit more air back in it, and then dropped it from space. This is what's happened.
Yes, yes. That's kind of what it looks like.
Okay. I have to keep remembering to say soccer.
Soccer, yeah.
Because when I was overseas, I was always corrected that it was football. And then I get here, and,
my
family corrects me that it's soccer. We play football on Sunday.
American football. And I get the same crap about chips. Chips or French fries. You know.
Yeah, and there's neither of those in this episode.
Yeah.
So that was
another...
No, that was my fault for going off on the foosball. But, yeah, so the sketchy old man takes his newfound treasure.
Yeah, he just puts it in his sack.
Well, he's a poacher of some kind. He's out there trying to trap rabbits.
Rabbits. I was like, what?
Yeah, it was a rabbit trap he was setting up.
Okay.
Or some small game.
I could not catch it because I couldn't understand a single word that this guy said.
You'll get him back in the house now, woman!
Yeah, I don't even think that's what it was.
Yeah, when he's talking to his wife, it gets a little rough because, one, the sound quality.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, the accent gets really thick.
Yeah.
This is country English.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's a redneck, basically.
Okay. So I guess they have those in England too.
Yes. White trash and rednecks. Kind of different.
But again, with English accents.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice. It's nice to see that we're not that different, though.
Yeah.
Between our two great nations.
Yeah. I would say that this guy was still pretty creepy, though.
He's working class. He's man out, lives off the land.
Yeah, but he had that creepy stare.
Yeah.
And he was pretty mean to his wife.
Yeah.
But she was a nag, so...
What are you putting in the box?
Yeah, she just thought that he had his Playboys hidden in the box or something, or I don't know.
Tells her to get in the house and make him a sandwich.
That's right. That's right, woman. Give me a sandwich.
Like a good wife need to be doing.
I like how he kept calling them the Thunderball, too, though.
Yeah, he called the meteorites or the meteors Thunderballs.
Yeah, so I was like, I guess he's a James Bond fan.
He might. Well, this was...
This was after.
No, this was before Thunderball, wasn't
it?
No. Oh, that's right. They remade Thunderball as something else, didn't they?
I thought that was
in the 70s.
I don't know. There was a little sketchy thing going on about the script to Thunderball, but I thought it came out in mid-60s. I don't know. I wasn't alive then.
Yeah. So, units looking to pick up all of these meteorites. And later on, the old guy tries to actually sell. You know, it's like, I'm not saying I got one, but if I had one, how much would you blokes be willing to pay for it? Would you got one? I didn't say I had one.
But if I found one.
If I leave here, and I'm walking out to my car, and I trip, and I look back, and there's one there, how much would you give me for it? Not that I got one now.
Just hand it over. I never said I had
one. I didn't say you got one. Because it's not like I put one of them things in a chest in my barn. I sure as hell wouldn't do that.
No.
But if I did,
if I
went back and got it and brought it here, how much would you give for it?
How about $250?
$19.99.
But if you act now...
$12.
If you act now, we'll throw in this creepy toy plastic doll.
Ooh. Yeah, those show up pretty soon.
And it moves on its own.
Meanwhile, though, the TARDIS shows up.
Yes.
Out in the woods. It just kind of lands and...
The doors open, the doctor just face first.
Well, somebody
on the
falls
ground.
Out.
Well, yeah.
Because you got to remember, the last time we saw the doctor, he was Patrick Troughton.
And he was in black and white.
But I'm pretty sure adding color film wouldn't make Patrick Troughton look this different.
No. But it's a guy falling out of a police box that just materialized in the middle of a forest.
After we saw the doctor being exiled in his last episode.
Yeah, so...
They were going to forcibly change his appearance. So I guess they forced a regeneration on him at the end of War Games as his punishment.
Yeah.
And exiled him to Earth.
Yeah.
Stuck on one planet.
Because we do find out that they've basically sabotaged his TARDIS, too,
yeah.
So that he can't leave. So he is trapped there for an indeterminate amount of time. But
right.
I mean, I guess as far as the doctor's concerned, he loves going to Earth, so...
Not that much.
No, he doesn't want to get trapped here, but it could have been worse. He could have been trapped, like, you know, Pluto or something.
I don't know about all that.
I'm just saying...
They put him somewhere habitable.
He likes the humans. He likes coming to Earth to visit. He just doesn't want to be trapped here.
So it's basically his punishment is, oh, you like him so much, then why don't you go live with him for a while?
Yeah.
Ah, jeez.
Yeah. Like, you like visiting Hawaii, but you wouldn't want to just be dumped on the deserted island in the middle of the South Pacific.
Earth is a nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live here.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. It makes us locals feel great, huh? Glad I don't live here.
I was going to say, I thought you were from somewhere else, too.
Yeah, well. So, unit soldiers find him in the woods,
mm-hmm.
which just, all this just happens to be happening around Ashbridge Cottage Hospital.
Yes.
The TARDIS crash, or the TARDIS lands, the doctor passes out in the woods near the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
The meteorites are all coming down near the hospital.
It's all very convenient.
The farmer lives just down the road from the cottage mm-hmm. hospital. And when I heard this term cottage hospital, I kind of flashed back.
I've heard
that
before. Harry Jones, MP, fly down north.
That's where it was. That's where Harriet Jones, or that's not where, but that's what she was coming to see the Prime Minister
right.
about, was the cottage hospitals.
She's trying to raise the funding.
Right, for cottage hospital
yeah.
in Flydale North.
And I was a little confused about what exactly the cottage hospital was, so I had to look this up also, of
mm-hmm.
course. And it's basically just kind of like your little hometown hospital, it seemed
mm-hmm.
like. You know, it's kind of a rural building where it's... you know, people who are locals could go and get more...
Socialized medicine.
Well, no, not socialized medicine. More, like, in-depth treatment rather than just going to your, you know, family physician down the street, you know, maybe even does house calls still or whatever, rather than going out to like a big city where the doctors don't know you and that sort of thing. Like, this is kind of a your local
rural, small town hospital.
Yeah, hospital. So, and it's supposed to be a little bit more cozy. It's kind of more like a house and that sort of thing. That's mm-hmm. that's kind of what I got from it. Well, so
I guess the place that they were shooting at what was the name of the place?
Wood Norton.
BBC Wood Norton.
Yeah.
It looks like they used the exteriors of that building as the exteriors for Ashbridge Cottage Hospital.
Yeah, and it's a nice looking little place. Yeah. I'd like to live there.
But it does look more like a hotel.
Yeah, it does.
I think I would be comfortable going. So, you know, you wouldn't be as, you know, I'm going to a hospital.
Yeah, it wasn't all just clinical and, mm-hmm.
This looks like somewhere you would take a summer vacation in the mountains.
Exactly. It looked like a nice little vacation house. It kind of small rooms, but kind of cozy. So
now they've got the doctor in the hospital.
And he's in a coma.
Passed out. He does momentarily come to, mm-hmm. because, you know, the brigadier comes because they said they found a guy in a police box in the woods.
And he's like, oh, I know who this is.
He's like, hey, we were invaded, when he's telling Liz Shaw earlier, he's like, well, we were invaded twice before,
mm-hmm.
and we had help from this, you know, chap named the doctor.
Yeah.
She's like, we were invaded. She's laughing in his face.
I don't believe it.
Because, like, you described her as, like, the Scully of this.
Because when, he's kind of going over what UNIT is, he said, you know, I guess it stands for the United Nations
Intelligence Task Force.
At that time, that's what it stood for.
Yes.
So he's saying that they look into the odd and the unexplained, and I just immediately thought of the X-Files.
Well, it's like a reverse X-Files, though, because they believe it because they've seen it.
Right.
They're help covering it up, but everybody in UNIT knows, oh yeah, there's aliens. We had to shoot a Sontaran last week. Yeah.
Right.
Well, actually, the only thing at this point that they'd fought was the Yeti and the Cybermen.
Okay.
And the invasion. Those were the two previous times that we meet Lethbridge Stewart.
And I haven't seen either of those yet.
Yeah, he was a colonel in the first. But anyway.
So he got promoted.
Yeah, he did get promoted. And they formed UNIT before the second one.
And so Liz Shaw is kind of like the Dana Scully. She's just like, I don't believe any of this stuff. You know, and even when she meets the doctor, she's like, I'm not believing any of this.
Yeah.
You know, she sees the TARDIS and she's like, oh, it's just a box.
It's
you don't have
box.
Anything in there. You don't have any equipment. You don't have, you know.
But as soon as the brigadier hears that there's a police box in the middle of the woods and some guy fell out of it, it's like, oh, hey, there's our guy.
Mm-hmm.
We got meteors falling out of the sky, and then he shows up, obviously the doctor.
Mm-hmm. But he goes to see the doctor, and he doesn't recognize him, and he's like, I don't know this person. I've never met him before in my life. So
but the doctor wakes up momentarily and calls him by his name.
Right.
And recognizes him.
So, which means that, obviously, I mean, I've never seen the other ones with the Brigadier, but mm-hmm.
it was all during the second Doctor.
Yeah, I would assume that he's not even familiar with the idea that this guy can regenerate.
Well, technically, we haven't really named regeneration yet.
It just happens.
But between the first and the second happened, they really didn't go into too many details about what it was.
It was just all of a sudden a different person.
Right, well, he regenerated. There was a regeneration mm-hmm. scene, but they never called it regeneration. They never, like I said, went into too many details. It was like, hey, you know, when we need to, we can change and be healthy again type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But not too many details. The second doctor to the third doctor, it was a punishment by the Time Lords.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that even counts as a regeneration. And then maybe,
I'm not even
you know.
Get into that, yeah, I think it does.
Okay,
I
do too. I've always accepted it as being one. But we don't see it happen. It's all off screen when they change him.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended the last episode not knowing what he was going to look like.
Right.
Where now, usually, that's how the episode ends, is when he changes into the new actor.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, we've got this new guy. Lethbridge Stewart doesn't know who the heck he is, but it's not the, you know, mohair-cutted tramp that he used to hang out with.
Yeah, but the doctor obviously knows him. And
right.
I like when he wakes up and the first thing he says is, my shoes, where's my shoes?
I need my shoes.
I mean, because, you know, being that he's probably been to the future and he's seen Die Hard, he knows that if he's going to be in trouble and going through adventure, you need shoes because you don't want to walk across the broken glass without shoes.
Exactly. And since UNIT's involved and the Brigadier does like to shoot,
yes,
there could be broken glass.
Yes.
So that was a good first question, is where's my shoes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it's starting off pretty good. The reason he wants his shoes is that's where he hides his TARDIS key.
Yes. Which is a good place for it.
Yeah, if you're going to regenerate and not know where you're going to come out. This is the first time, though, that he was really kind of knocked on his ass. for the regeneration.
Yeah,
granted, there's only been one before this, but he was pretty, you know, much up and about.
But it does kind of set the standard a little bit from here on out, doesn't it? Like, I haven't seen a lot of the other classic ones.
Well, no, because when he regenerated at the end of his, you know, series, when he changes to Tom Baker, he doesn't seem to be out as long as this.
Okay.
And he was poisoned and stuff, and so, you know, it was like...
Maybe it just depends on how they regenerate, like how...
Right, because I think something went wrong between 4 and 5... And he had to go to the Zero Room. But again, he was up and about more than I think John Pertwee was in this episode.
Mm-hmm. And when we see between 9 and 10, 10 is out for
most
a couple
of
days.
Yeah. He's wearing Howard's pajamas. And,
yeah, he's in the Arthur Dent costume.
Yeah, saving the world in his gym jams.
Yeah.
But this one, you know, he's in the hospital. They're taking blood samples and stuff. The lab is calling, chewing out the doctor, you know, for trying to pull a joke.
Is this a joke?
But he was going to complain because he thought the x-ray department was pulling a joke on him because he sees two hearts. Which, you know, for us fans, this is the first time that we establish the doctor has two hearts.
Mm-hmm.
His binary vascular system.
Which is how he gets out of a lot of trouble, apparently.
Later on, yeah. And it was kind of indicated that he had one heart prior to this.
Really?
They really didn't kind of... flesh out, oh yeah, he's two hearts, and they didn't make him as alien as he is now. So a lot of the groundwork for the rest of the series gets kind of changed up and set, you know, he has two hearts.
Right.
And his blood's different.
From what I understand, like I said, I haven't watched a lot of the really older ones, but there were a lot of things at the very beginning where you're not even really sure if he's an alien or not. I mean, did they even go into that? Because it was just kind of
this old guy
with his granddaughter.
It wasn't until the previous episode with Patrick Troughton on, like, his last episode that we even heard of the Time Lords. He would always refer to his people or, you know, getting back to my people or escaping my people or blah, blah, blah. But this, you know, in the last episode, The War Games, was when he first started talking about, oh, you know, I've been running from the Time Lords, and they're going to be upset when they catch me, and things like that.
So basically, they're making this stuff up as they go along.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
They didn't write out 50 years worth of television in a
big binder.
No, but
they didn't have, like,
Terrence Dix had in his cupboard. And
but what I'm saying is they didn't have, like, a,
passed it on
here's
the
doctor,
Nathan Turner,
and he's from this planet. You know, they just kind of said, well, we need something to fill in here, so we're going to say he's from Gallifrey.
Sounds like it's in Ireland.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. anyway.
So the doctor, you know, is back in his little coma or whatever, and people have overheard that he's in the hospital. And one of the janitors calls the newspaper and says something's going on. And this is when creepy guy in a suit shows up.
Yeah, the shiny face.
And when he... realizes, you know, what's going on and units there, he sends some of his guys dressed as doctors to kidnap the doctor.
And this is where it was getting a little bit confusing for me making the notes because I'm writing doctor does this. I'm like, wait, which doctor am I talking about?
Are you talking about the doctor or the Time Lord doctor? The medical doctor or the our doctor?
Right. So I had to come up with a clever way around that.
They taped the doctor's mouth.
Yeah, it was like, it's what a weird...
It looked almost like flesh tone.
Yeah, and it like sucked into his face.
Right,
into
you could see
everything.
His lips and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, you could kill
it
somebody
creepy
with that
looking.
Stuff. And they put him in a wheelchair, and they're going to put him in the ambulance, and he escapes.
Yes, and then the wacky chase.
And then there's the,
ensues.
Yeah, the wacky wheelchair chase.
Yeah.
Which he escapes, because Unit's chasing the fake doctors that are trying to kidnap him. Now, when Unit... you know, it's chasing them down, that's fine because that lets the doctor escape, busts out of his wheelchair, goes stumbling through the woods to get back to his TARDIS.
Oh, but there's some armed guards there that the Brigadier sent to keep an eye on everything.
And they shoot him.
Yeah.
And that's the end of episode one.
And you're like, what the hell? He just got out of the hospital from
being
in a
coma. And they shoot him in
the
head.
They
down
shoot
he goes.
Him. I think they shot him in the chest.
Head.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Grazed him right past. We find out as the next, because that's one of the things, if you're watching this on Netflix, when the credits start, don't leave, don't stop it, because this is a four-part thing, but they include the ending credits and the beginning credits for each one.
Yes.
So you will see four full 25-minute episodes, but in one play.
Mm-hmm. And there is a little bit of overlap at the beginning of each.
Yeah, because this was originally a week later that you'd come. So they'd sum up the last episode. Mm-hmm. He comes out of the woods and gets shot again. And then we start there. we find out that now he's put himself into some kind of coma. It's a self-induced coma.
Right.
And he, the gunshot just grazed his scalp. So just a little, you know, burn on his head or whatever. Lucky. You know, maybe unit soldiers shoot like stormtroopers.
Right.
Not sure. But this time...
outside of a barn.
So this time, though, when he comes to... He is going to get away because they brought in specialists to examine him. But before the specialist gets there, the doctor is up and about trying to sneak out.
Yeah, and he sneaks down the hall, and I thought this was kind of a funny little scene. He sees this room that says doctors only.
And he kind of looks back like,
he's like, okay, fair enough. I can go in, right? Goes in, and he sees some clothes, but nothing's really catching his attention, and he hears some voices, so... He sneaks into the next room while the people come in.
Right.
And then we get a nice little doctor shower scene.
Yes. You know. This will be the first of two.
Right.
We get another one of these shower scenes with the 11th Doctor.
So if you're playing the Doctor Who drinking game, you get an extra bonus shot for this because it's such a rare event.
Oh, okay. I didn't know there was like a drinking game, but if the Doctor's in the shower, it's an extra shot.
Yeah.
So every time the Doctor's in the shower naked, two shots.
Yeah.
Got it.
I think we need to work on that.
And when he's in the shower, though, I mean, he's faking the shower. He's got the water running.
He's singing.
He's got the little plastic shower cap on and his fake singing and everything. We get a good shot of his tattoo.
Yes. He does have the tough-ass tattoo.
Cobra.
Yeah. Right on his forearm.
Yeah. He said he woke up, the actor, John Pertwee, when he was in the Navy, I guess woke up one morning and... Oh, tattoo.
Oh, I got a little drunk last night.
Whoops. But it was the Navy. It was World War II. Stuff happens.
Yeah, things happen.
So then he kicked somebody's ass and continued on with his day, because that's the kind of man John Pertwee was.
Yes.
Major ass kicker.
Yes. And he might not look like it just yet, because we've just started.
Yeah.
But there's a couple scenes that later on in the series where I was like, damn, where did this come
this
from?
This guy's like just looks 50. Like,
he just looks like some old guy, you know? He just looks like grandpa doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's kicking ass.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And, you know, at first I was a little skeptical about this doctor, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, because, you know, you see the pictures of him and he's dressed like like he's in Victorian era. You know, he's got these purple velour suits with the ruffles and, you know, the magician cloak, which he finds next. And, you know, I'm just like, what is this? This is just, you know, he's wearing a magician's outfit or something. This is kind of a little hokey.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Now, this was really similar to the way the 11th Doctor, when he finally got up to speed at the end of the 11th Hour.
Yes.
Years later, not to spoil anything, but he goes on a very similar clothes gathering thing through a hospital.
Yeah, and he ends up with kind of an old-fashioned outfit also.
I think it's kind of cool how they continually do this when the new series keeps referring back to old things.
It's kind of like little Easter eggs for the people who've been watching to kind of ties everything together. And then at the same time, if you start with the newer ones and then go back, it's almost like seeing a good prequel, you know? Not like this crappy Star Wars prequels.
Well, no, I mean, the thing for me, though, is having grown up on it, you forget these things. It's kind of in there.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you watch the new series and then come back...
You're like, oh, that's right, yeah.
Ah, they got it from here. Because I remembered the Autons, but I'd forgotten... You know, I remembered the shower scene, but I didn't really make the connection between the new doctor taking a shower and this doctor taking a shower and this doctor stealing his clothes from the hospital and that doctor stealing his clothes from the hospital. Mm-hmm. All the nice little tie-ins.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. But,
So he gets on with his little shower after the guys leave and goes into the next room and steals this guy's outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Steals, you know, his cloak, his shirt, everything. And I guess he must have found his car key also.
Might have been in his clothes.
Probably. Been in his jacket. Maybe in the shoe. Maybe he also keeps
Maybe it didn't have a key. Maybe he's like push button
maybe,
start.
Maybe. That could have been because it was a really old fashioned car.
Yeah.
Maybe he just had like the hand gears. Crank. Yeah. And he couldn't get it in the gear, but you know.
Took him a
he
second.
He stole a car.
Yeah.
He's kind of a badass doctor.
Took off.
Mm-hmm.
And now, meanwhile, Unit is looking for him and he just drives up to Unit headquarters.
Yeah.
And the guard that greets him doesn't even have a chance to ask anything.
No.
As soon as the guard comes up, the doctor's like, no, I don't have a pass. No, I'm not going to show you any identification. Get the brigadier. He's expecting me. I'm not going to answer any more questions.
And you're like, damn right. He's like, damn right.
And the guy just kind of was like, okay, I'm going to go call the brigadier. He doesn't even say anything. He's just like,
okay.
And then there's a phone call to the brigadier. Yeah, the doctor's here to see you.
So it's like he has the Jedi mind trick.
Yeah.
You will let me in to see the brigadier.
Maybe he's like this is pre-Star Wars, so this could have been.
Or maybe the magic was in that cloak that he stole.
The magician's cloak.
Yes.
The magic was in the cloak the whole time.
Yes. Now, I did think, though, is this well before the psychic paper? When was the psychic paper actually introduced? Is that something that they brought back?
That's a new series.
Okay. Because I was thinking that would be
it's from the revived
really,
series.
Really easy to just, here it yeah, is.
But they didn't have that back then.
Yeah.
He picked it all up between.
Yeah. I just didn't know if he picked it up, you know, back then or not.
It was after. So okay. Now, you know, he gets in, meets Liz Shaw, and says that he tracked his TARDIS using his, it's almost like a GPS watch.
Yeah.
He's just got a watch that hones in on the TARDIS.
Turn left at Unit Street.
The secret unit base is on Unit Street.
Why wouldn't it be?
Nobody ever even is like, why is it named Unit Street?
Why wouldn't it be?
I've got a unit for you. It's called a decameter.
Anyway.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Anywho. That's what we say on this show.
Anywho.
Thank you.
This is Tommy Rott.
So he meets Liz Shaw.
Yeah, and he's kind of flirty with her. He's like, oh, hello.
He's answering the brigadier and talking to him, and then he immediately changes tone and stuff, talks to Liz, like, oh, yeah.
And he just kind of does that slide over to her, like.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yes, Brig. Oh, my God, you're still talking. But the brigadier has the key.
Yes, and he will not hand it over to the doctor.
No.
So the doctor's like, well, is this where he kind of, you know, haggles with him a little bit and says, I'll help you with your problem if you give me the key.
Yeah, you got this stuff falling out of space. I got the knowledge to make this stuff, you know, figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do this. You give me the key. Sure. So
right.
The brigadier leaves to take care of something else.
I guess this is where they start to analyze this meteorite that they
found.
Right,
the fragment.
It's just the hollow plastic shell, mm-hmm. like kind of a balloon, like a broken balloon or something.
Right.
And they, at first, they're not really getting any signal out of it. I guess, you know, it's just the shell. There's nothing going on with it anymore. And the doctor's like, well, I could do this such and such test, but I really need my equipment that's in the TARDIS.
And Liz doesn't, she's not buying that there's equipment
she's
in
like,
the TARDIS.
You don't have stuff in there. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, it's got a full laboratory.
And she's like, oh, I don't believe you. And he's like, well, get me the key from the brigadier, and I'll show it to you. And she's like, all right, then. And she goes to the office where the brigadier's, like, talking to this witness who was working at the plastic factory or whatever. He's not looking, so she just goes, shoink, takes the key and immediately gives it to the doctor. And while the key wouldn't work for the brigadier,
it does
it
work.
Works immediately for the doctor.
Because
which,
the doctor said it had a metabolism guard on it. What was it? A metabolism something?
Oh, I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Magic. So I guess if in the future, does it still have that? Does he encode that for Rose and for any other
vagaries? This is one of those things that the key, like on the very first doctor, it was, there's a TARDIS key, but not anybody can use it because you have to turn it a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't turn it a certain way, it'll basically deadlock seal, and nobody will ever be able to open it.
Okay.
And I think that's kind of dumb, because, you know.
Yeah, because then he wouldn't be able to open it either.
Right, you stumble home, and then you locked yourself out of the TARDIS forever.
Yeah, what if he's had a few drinks or something?
And plus, you know, Billy Hartnell was kind of old when he was.
Yeah.
You know, he played an older doctor, so. Even though he's only 5 years older than Hartnell, I think, when he took the job.
Really?
Yeah, he's 55, 56. But they gave him the gray wig, and he played.
Oh, okay.
He was playing the grandfather. So, yeah, they changed it now so that it's got a metabolism sensor.
Okay.
Ooh.
But, of course, what does he do but get in and tries to start
shuts the door and, yeah, made a very sick-sounding TARDIS sound.
Yes. And he kind of comes out all sheepishly and.
Yeah, the brigadier's all mad at Liz Shaw for giving him the key.
And she's.
But she's cross with the doctor for lying.
Yeah, but.
He's cross at Liz Shaw for falling for it.
I'm sure a part of her thinks, well, it's kind of cool that he was telling the truth because now that she can see that. Because I kind of felt like maybe she wasn't just gullible because number one, I think that she didn't believe him, mm-hmm. but I think a part of her wanted to believe him.
And this proved that, well, okay, it may not be a spaceman thing, but it's something.
Yeah, something's going on.
Because smoke and noise is coming out of the TARDIS now.
Yeah. But I like how he sits down on the chair and he's like, okay, I won't do it again.
Yeah, he's like, a little kid. Kid that got busted or something.
You're in timeout, mister.
Okay, I'm sorry. Right. But he tries to now work out the new deal that, hey, keep working on this and then we can help you out mm-hmm. with the TARDIS situation. Because apparently the Time Lords have changed the dematerialization code.
Yeah.
So.
Tough shit.
Yep, you can't leave. You're stuck on Earth. And now they've got the witness from the autoplastics factory.
And this is the Brigadier. Yeah, this is a guy who used to work there. He left for 6 months and come to find out, comes back.
And now everybody's fired. His office is locked up. Yeah.
Just the whole place is turned upside down.
Yeah.
And when they said that he was gone for 6 months, I immediately thought, oh, didn't they say that meteorites had fallen
six months ago.
Hmm.
Yep.
You know.
It's all starting to tie together.
Yeah. So.
And the creepy guy who orchestrated the doctor's kidnapping at the beginning from the hospital is there, and he seems to be the guy running the show at the plastics factory.
Right.
He's not the guy in charge, but he's mind controlling the guy who is in charge.
Right. So I guess these villains have mind control.
Yeah, they've somehow gotten his head.
Yeah.
So the Autons, as we find out, these plastic mannequin men or whatever, are being made by the nesting consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And what we figure out is that the nesting consciousness comes to Earth in pieces and parts.
Yeah, inside those meteorites, inside those little plastic bubbles.
Right, and now they're collecting those meteorites so it can reassemble its consciousness and start taking over mm-hmm. the world. Because they've been doing this for 1,000 million years.
Not a billion, but 1,000 million.
Billion, million, trillion is all. It's one of those things where the British version and the U.S. version are different.
They just say it different. It's the same number.
Their billion is different than our billion, or it used to be.
Okay, for the American listeners, that's a billion.
1,000 million?
Why say 1,000 million when you can say a billion?
Because a billion is something else.
Okay, fine.
Seriously.
Fine.
All right. I'm just saying. So apparently, though, they come to Earth, they control plastics.
Yeah, and this was kind of a weird thing for me. This was mm-hmm. something that always kind of confused me about the Autons. That they seem to just, they have an affinity with plastic, apparently.
Okay.
And I just don't understand why an alien race from a completely different planet
mm-hmm.
would seem to have this attachment with, or be able to make petroleum byproduct synthetic materials, the same as that we do on Earth. It's something that seems to me that's something that we make. It's not like they can latch onto
like natural forming plastics.
Right. They don't latch onto iron, or they don't latch onto like water
or aluminium.
Yeah, aluminium.
It's plastic.
It's plastic. And it's, like I said, it's something that we make, you know.
Or they go from civilized society to civilized society.
But does that mean that there's other planets out there that make plastic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not? There's other planets out there that make lasers, and there's other planets that make glass, so why couldn't
they? It just always seemed weird to me that it was just plastic.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just saying it's a little weird.
So they've taken over the doll factory.
Yeah, and they're making replicas, human replicas.
Of important people.
Yeah.
I like how they tie in Madame Tussauds,
mm-hmm.
the wax
museum.
Right, of all the famous people.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been able to make robotic plastic copies of key civil servants
mm-hmm.
that they're going to use to take over the government. One of the people they take over is Major General Scobie.
Scurvy.
No, Scobie.
Scurvy.
Scobie.
I kept hearing Scurvy.
It's Scobie. And he's the British Army liaison to unit. And technically outranked, well, not technically, a Major General outranks a Brigadier.
Mm-hmm.
So
he outranks him, but, you know.
And he gets taken over.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't get taken over, he gets replaced.
Yeah, and the real General Scurvy gets put into the wax museum in the special wing of the museum where it's all these new fancy plastics that this company is making. And it's all right. Oh, look.
Some of the scenes were actually shot there at the real.
Oh, really?
Madame Tussauds.
Okay, cool.
How do you say that? Tussaud?
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 I don't know.
hey, you know what? Leave us a message. Tell us how to say it. I got to do something to get people to interact with us on the internets. So I'll just start saying English words wrong, and even though that's French.
And it's a name, too, so it's. I'm surprised if you would be able to say it right, honestly. So anyway.
They've taken over, these people. Or and, they're going to.
Yeah. And so they've started slowly replacing everyone, and then they've also started making mannequins, and they've kind of cornered the market on mannequins across the country, apparently.
So all the shops are full of Autoplastics mannequins.
Yes.
I like the original name. The Autons come from Autoplastics.
Yes. Very clever. Mm. So, and I kind of take it that in this instance, in this episode, they can only control the plastics that they created.
Right.
As opposed to in the Rose episode in 2005.
That we reviewed on our first episode of this podcast.
They seem to be able to control any plastic. Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe they've evolved in between.
Or maybe all these years since 1970, Autoplastics didn't get put out of business. And so they've been feeding the plastic market.
It's the long game.
Yeah. This is their version of the long game.
Yeah.
But in any event, they send their Auton mannequins out to collect the spheres.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got most of them, but one of the key ones gets intercepted by UNIT.
Yes. And that's when they send in General Scurvy to go collect it.
Right. So General Scurvy, or the fake General Scurvy, comes in. And kind of strong arms the major that's left in charge to take it away from, you know, oh, British Army's taking this now. It's ours.
Yeah. I'll take it. I need to clear this with the brigadier.
No, you don't. I outrank all y'all.
Yeah. So he just kind of takes it back to Autoplastics and sees an Auton. And meanwhile, all the mannequins across the country are breaking out of the shop windows.
Yeah. Once they get this last piece, they're able the next morning to start their takeover.
Right. Because now they've got all their mind control. Except for, I guess, the one that broke. So I guess they're operating
the one they were looking for, they kept referring to as the swarm leader. So it was kind of a key piece.
Okay.
Because all these spheres come together to make one collective brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's like non-corporeal brain energy thing.
Right.
But they've got this big container, you know, UNIVAC-looking thing.
Yeah, that was a weird thing.
Well, that's where the nesting consciousness is basically making a body.
Okay, see, this is where I was a little bit confused, because they were saying that it's just basically an entity.
But then we see a body later.
Yeah, and it's got tentacles, and it reaches out, and it grabs the doctor on the neck, and it's...
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, so about this time, I guess, is when the doctor, you know, decides he needs to investigate this plastics factory. And, you know, they've found out that the plastic cannot be hurt by
bullets.
Guns.
Yeah.
So they have to come up with something else to figure out how to defeat these things. And the doctor and Liz put their heads together and they come up with this little device that shoots out a high frequency signal.
Mm-hmm.
That, I guess, it intercepts the link between the nesting consciousness brain back at the plastic shop and all the Autons.
So it basically deactivates the plastic.
Yes. I mean,
So they're able to bypass them. And that's how, when they're breaking into the factory, General Scobie actually tries to stop the UNIT soldiers from going in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is the fake General Scobie.
Yeah, the fake General Scobie is stopping the UNIT soldiers from going in because he brings his regular British Army soldiers to stop them, and, you know, hey, he outranks the brigadier, he's going to put a stop to it. Well, the doctor, you know, tells him, oh, could you speak into this microphone, and has Liz activate it, and deactivates him. And down he goes. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised the doctor didn't get shot.
Right.
Again.
Again.
Because he's just like, you just took out the general, but he rolls him over, and now that he's no longer connected and alive... He has the obvious fake face.
Yeah, he turns back into the creepy mannequin with the hollow eyes and the whole thing, the real shiny plastic face. So, they go
now,
in.
The brigadier leads the army forces and they go in.
Yes. And they make their way into the, you know, the room with the big, what do you call it, the UNIVAC
looking thing.
Yeah. And you know, they're shooting all the Autons with the
high frequency disruptor thing.
Thingy, yes. And they find it doesn't work on the head unit here.
Yeah. Just as he gets up to it to take out the head thing, it stops working. I noticed almost immediately that the big radio plug had come unplugged from the top. So she's jiggling all the wires, taking the top off, checking everything. Meanwhile, the tentacles of doom have come out of this thing and are wrapping around the doctor's head, choking him. Mm-hmm. We get some really cool eyebrow action from John Pertwee.
Yes.
As he, you know, really hams it up getting choked.
Yeah, as he's strangled. Like reaching back and actually probably pulling on these things himself to choke himself with the tentacle.
Yeah.
Which is probably in a weird movie of some type from Japan.
Everything's a weird movie from Japan eventually. But
so all she had to do was plug this thing back in.
Yeah, so she plugs it back in finally. Zaps the thing.
She called IT and they said, did you reboot it? And she goes, oh, I didn't think about that. She reboots it and it works.
I'm going to start a count of all the times you make IT crowd references.
I've only seen like 2 episodes of
that show.
I know,
you've already started doing that stuff. But anyway, though, and that eventually kills the thing.
Yeah.
Yay.
Okay, another thing that bothered me, too, is that this looked nothing like the one in the 2005 series.
No.
And it didn't bother me about this episode so much as it bothered me about the new one.
That it was a big pool of plastic as opposed
to... Yeah, it was like this molten lava plastic blob as opposed to... I don't even know...
This tentacle rape monster that the hentai episode left out.
Exactly. And that weird plastic wrap... orifice that was pulsating on the side of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell was that even?
Like, was it its eye brain or
was
something.
Was it breathing through this thing? But didn't it just kind of look perverted? It was this plastic wrap.
It's only as perverted as the brain that comes to it.
Okay.
And so it was pretty disgusting.
Who were you
for
talking
you,
to?
Right?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
Okay.
I know what that tentacle was doing with the thing.
Okay. But they've killed it. And then they go back to unit, the day is saved, and the doctor who's trapped on Earth works out a deal with the Brig.
The Brig?
That's what they call him, the Brig.
Okay. Well, something different in the Navy.
Brigadier. Yeah, I understand. But yeah, he's the Brig.
Yeah. So he wants a resource to be able to fix his TARDIS, because mm-hmm. he wants to be able to escape eventually.
Right.
He wants some new clothes.
Yeah, because he stole the clothes, he stole a car.
Yeah, and he wants a new cool car.
Yeah, because he likes that old car.
And of all the things that he chooses for his clothes, that he, you know, Unit could get him anything.
Yeah.
But he goes to, like, the thrift store.
No.
And gets this old purple velour suit.
This is the 70s. That was a new purple velour suit.
Okay, well, point taken.
It's the 70s in England, okay?
Yeah.
Because, come on, did you not think at some point, watching other episodes of John Pertwee, that he took his fashion guide from Austin Powers?
Yeah, very good point.
It's Austin Powers with a cape.
Yeah. Yeah, baby.
See? that was just the style back then. Crushed velvet suits.
And he didn't wear an onion on his belt.
No.
Because it wasn't the style at the time.
No, you had to go back to, I think, the first doctor who did that when he was younger.
Yes. Yeah, he did. And he would often say, well, I wore an onion on my belt because it was the style at the time.
Don't do that. So... the doctor's now hooked up with Unit, and this is going to basically set up the next few seasons of Doctor Who
mm-hmm.
with the classic series during his time exiled on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so now he's going to be doing weekly adventures, help saving the Earth with Unit.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the years that make the Brigadier and Liz Shaw, Joe Grant to some extent, Sarah Jane Smith such beloved characters.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the time.
Yeah, and this is why I think it's a great place for people to start if they're going back to watch some of the older ones. I mean,
they're not too old. They're in color.
Yeah.
Sometimes the production value is pretty bad.
Yeah.
But it's the 70s.
I will say, as I was going through them and I was trying to do each episode in order through the Third Doctor,
mm-hmm.
and it got to a certain point where the special effects were not very special.
Mm-hmm.
They were just really, really bad.
Well, budgets were tight.
Oh, I know. But I think at some point they get to where they're... their imaginations were beyond what the special effects allowed them to do. And they kind of thought that their special effects were better than they actually were at the time. And I felt like at some point the storytelling kind of got ramped back just a little bit in order to do these big creatures and things. And
well, I mean,
but we'll get to that, I guess,
later. He stuck on the Earth until the episode called The Three Doctors, where they reunite him with the previous two doctors. Although it's mainly just him and the second doctor.
Right.
Because the first doctor's kind of old and...
He just kind of shows up on a TV screen.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
I'm trapped in space. If I was a TARDIS, would you ride me?
Does not say okay. that. And he doesn't sound like Bill Clinton.
Hi!
Or Harry Carey. Will Ferrell as Dan... the hell's his name? Harry Carey.
Hi! If I was a top 40 TARDIS, would you steal me? Would you fly me to the moon? If the moon was made out of spare ribs, would you take a bite?
What if it were made of fish fingers and custard?
Spoilers.
That's not a spoiler.
It could be.
No, fish fingers and custard.
Yeah.
Does that spoil anything?
No. Well, your stomach.
No, it's actually delicious. Pretty good. It is delicious.
But people who haven't seen the entire series are like, what?
The hell are you talking about? Trust
so,
fish fingers
we liked the episode pretty much. I mean, for the original series, the classic series, this was pretty good.
Yes, definitely.
Great place to start if you're trying to kind of go retro, cross your own time streams, and watch some of the classic Who.
Right.
You've run out of new Who. You've, you know, skipped our podcast and went all the way through season six, or series six, I got to start saying. Because the old show is seasons, the new is series.
Right.
So, we're still in first series of the 2005 show.
Yeah.
People who've already shot past us, watched all the ones on Netflix, now they're going back.
Yeah.
And they're looking for a good place to start.
I can't really blame them because when I first got into the show, I think I watched every episode in roughly a week.
Well, you know? Yeah, but you started, what, second season, third?
Third, I think.
Yeah, and they're only 13, 14 episodes a season.
Yeah, but that's still, for an hour show, that's a lot of TV for like a week. I mean, it was one of those shows where I was up till 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, like, just one more show. Just one more show.
I don't think you get that so much with the classic Who. You'll do that with with how it's the 25-minute episodes. Sometimes there'll be like six episodes or six parts to one story. And you'll want to stay for the whole thing. Because I used to do that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
With the old Tom Baker.
And it's
Baker.
Easy to do. Because you think like, oh, it's just another 20 minutes or something. And before you know it, you've been sitting there watching for like almost 2 hours.
Yeah. Because this one went by pretty fast.
Yeah.
Unlike this episode of our podcast.
No.
But.
It was a great episode. We're great.
So.
Don't be like that.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, sometimes I get tired of hearing myself talk.
Oh, I get tired of hearing you talk too. But
I'm on
like
8 shows a week.
Yeah.
It's insane. So anyway, we liked this episode. If you're going to watch a classic Who episode, if you want a good place to start, this is a good place to start. And hopefully if you're coming to this after watching new Who, this is, you know, kind of like filling in some gaps for you.
Yeah.
So good show. Now, before we leave, we want to take a minute to thank our awesome friend, Daryl Lewis, for making us
this wonderful theme song.
Yeah, I love our theme song.
I do. I do.
And, you know, I have like the whole thing that I listen to sometimes on my iPod. Yeah.
Yeah. And I listen to it and I get stuck in my head for hours.
And you can check out his website at flyingmonkeymotogear.com.
Yes. And he's got a blog where he just does motorcycles, sci-fi, rock and roll. All kinds of fun things.
I still love. I love the Yvonne Craig.
Yes,
who played Batgirl, and how he was able to combine sci-fi because she was on Star Trek, rock and roll because she was in a movie with Elvis, and motorcycles because she rode a motorcycle when she was Batgirl.
He did another one similar to that recently with two actresses from I think Battlestar
Galactica, Starbuck, and Number Six, Capricorn.
Yeah, see, I haven't watched BSG, so
I wasn't aware that they were into motorcycles the way that they are, and that they were good friends, and so that was a neat thing that I picked up from his blog. So yeah, you should definitely check it out.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So, but another thing that we want to talk about is...
There's more?
Yes.
Oh.
This is a special, a very special episode of Playing Doctor.
Because we have a lot of stuff at the end. That's good.
Yes, because we're going to be at a convention this year.
Yes, we are. Now, this is the intervention.
Yes, which is not alcoholics.
No.
It's not drug users, though.
No. It's your online life in person.
Yes.
So my friend Oni took, on a Zoomie, took internet, combined it with convention, internet, convention, intervention.
Yes. And I just got to say, I've been going since the first year, just as a guest. And or not as a guest, but
attendee.
As a... Yes.
I've been going since the first year.
You've been a guest.
Yeah, I have a table. And once again, I'll have a table this year. Mainly because of my work on the comic strip, Reality Amok, that I do at racomics.com. But this year, I'll have my books there, but we will also be promoting this show and I guess Dork Trek and any of our other appearances. So people, if you can't get enough of us on one show, you'll be able to find us all over the internet by the time you leave there.
We're everywhere.
Yeah, I want to be the king of all internets.
The king of interwebs.
Yes. But
I'll make you a little crown.
It's going to be this September 21st to 23rd. Mm-hmm. So it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the Hilton, Washington, D.C. in Rockville, Maryland.
Which is a little misleading that it's
Hilton, it says Washington. The Hilton, Washington, D.C., but it's in Rockville, which is like literally right there at Bethesda.
Yeah, it's right outside the Beltway if you're familiar with Washington, D.C. area.
And you can check out their website, and I'll make sure I put this in the show notes, or at least put a link on the sidebar. For it's interventioncon.com.
Yes.
So interventioncon.com.
Yes.
Okay. So I definitely have to put a link to that because I can't say that too many times. But it's always fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a ton of fun. I mean, there's something to do like 24 hours a day from the time that they open till the time that they close.
Right. It usually starts like noon or afternoon on Friday, and it doesn't stop until Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and when they say it's a 24-hour, it's literally 24 hours, I think.
She has music overnight. There's there's room parties that people do on their own.
There's dance parties in one of the
parties.
Rooms.
Dance parties. She has, last year had, awesome retro games. So, I mean, I've had a blast. And the thing is, if I wasn't going as a guest and had to work a table, I would be going just to go to a convention.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I was trying to say, was that I didn't go as a guest. I just went for fun. And it is a blast. And let me just say that I take my daughter with me, who's 15. She's been going, so now she's... since she was 13. And, I wasn't really sure that she really liked it the first year, but the second year I was going back and she was like, I was like, so we're getting ready to go to intervention in a couple weeks. And she goes, oh, is that the thing we went to last year? And I said, yeah. And she goes, oh my God, that was so much fun. So, I mean, it's they've got stuff for kids and they even have special kids programming, you know, for all ages.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, a Comic-Con where like some little kids might get bored or something like that. There's something for everybody.
Well, they had their drawing room last year that was... a lot of fun.
They have the board games, the video games, the movie room.
One of my favorites, and I wish I could get involved in it, is they've had vampire and zombie LARP going on. And that looked like it was a lot of fun, but I just didn't have time.
I did the zombie one last year, and I wasn't really sure about it the first year, so I finally got into it. Basically, what you do is they give you a band, like a strip of cloth. And if you're a zombie... I think you had the band on your head, but if you were a survivor, if you were a human, you had it on your arm. Maybe it's vice versa.
And so the zombies are basically trying to catch you.
Yes. And if you're a zombie and you catch someone, you play rock, paper, scissors. And if you win, then you turn them into a zombie. If it's a draw or if they win, they survive.
And get away.
And the goal is for all the zombies to turn all the humans... And you don't have to participate in all this. Like they have a room where you just go and you just get abandoned and you play.
Yeah.
But
so you can be enjoying the con while you're surviving the zombie apocalypse.
But you might be like standing at a table or something and all of a sudden somebody comes up and
I think they keep it off the show floor.
Yeah, they do keep it
off
the show
floor. But we basically take over this hotel.
Yes. I mean, you could be anywhere. You could be in the lobby, you could be, you know, just down a hall and somebody comes up, taps you on the back of the shoulder and challenge you. And And they have little games where you can win power-ups, you know, you can restore your humanism and all, you know, all kinds of little fun things. So,
but yeah, I mean, so there's, I mean, there's comics. Basically, there's comics, there's podcasts, there's blogs.
Yeah.
All this stuff. Anything that's online, she's trying to, basically, like it says on her webpage, it's your online life in person.
Yes.
And I love that.
And one of my favorite things last year was just... had several drinks at this point, and we're walking down the hall and the walking past the movie room, and they just have YouTube videos showing of like just all the random funny videos. Like, and I think at the time it was like an hour's worth of cat videos, and you know, and I just sat there just completely amused by cats sticking their heads in paper bags for like 15 minutes.
Oh wow!
And I'm like, give me another drink. This is great.
Having fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so hopefully we'll see people there.
Yes.
You know, we have a few listeners that are in the area. So if you're in the Rockville area, around D.C., Bethesda area, check it out September 21st to 23rd at the Hilton on Rockville Pike. Go to interventioncon.com for more details, and I'll be sure to put a link on the page for you.
Yes.
If I can get a little logo made or something and stick it in the sidebar.
They probably have those on intervention.
Yeah, she's really, she's a good site. Yeah. I like it. So anyway, thanks for joining us. If you want to actually find us online, we are at playingdoctorpodcast.com, not playing doctor.
No.
Playingdoctorpodcast.com. On Facebook, we're facebook.com/playingdoctor. On the Twitters, we are...
Playing Doctors.
Yeah, we're at Playing Doctors with an S, because Playing Doctor was taken by somebody who doesn't use it.
I'm going to contact them. I think I'm going to start spamming them from a different account. Okay. Not from that account.
Give us your account. No, I think that you can't do that. You can't do cyberbullying to get an account.
What if I beg?
That might work.
Or maybe bribe.
Just not be like annoying. We're also on Google Plus. We're on the Google Pluses. At gplus.to/playingdoctor. So that's a short link.
Because
the Google links... No, but the Google link is like 16 pages to
type
it out.
But if you just say, look, go on Google Plus...
And search Playing Doctor. Or go gplus.to/playingdoctor.
Okay.
We're on iTunes, so you can actually go to the little iTunes store and search Playing Doctor Podcast, and we'll pop up with some other stuff. You can search for Doctor Who Podcast, and we show up eventually.
And if you go to our website, you can also see...
All of that's linked right there in the sidebar.
And if you don't have iTunes,
we have an RSS feed.
Got y'all covered.
Yep. So you can subscribe to the RSS feed and just get the podcast RSS, or... You can subscribe to the pages RSS and get our blogs. But right now, it's mainly just the shows that are coming out. But you could listen on the page, or you can download from the page.
Yes.
So
there's all kinds of ways. There's no excuse for you to not continue listening
to
the show.
So leave us a comment. If you use the iTunes, rate us. Leave us a comment on iTunes.
Please.
If you visit our website, leave a comment in the show notes that go up every week with the episode.
And any kind of feedback, whether you like the show, if you hate the show, if you have something else you want to add to it.
Yeah, what do you want to hear different? That's, you know, should Ben get fired? Sure. Kick him off the show. Replace him with, you know, the sock puppet or something. I don't know. But you can find me, if this hasn't driven you completely away, on Twitter, at RealityAmuck.
And I am on Twitter at Jenny_Z. And that's just the little line, not the word underscore.
Yeah, it's Jenny_Z. Because we have European audiences. They don't say Z. They say Z.
Zulu.
And I think that's racist.
No, it's not. It's
Zulu!
Isn't that the military code for Z?
I don't remember. I was in the Navy for you think. We never got that.
Yeah.
I got the X-ray and stopped because I didn't want to get radiation. So check us out. The TARDIS is here, so it's time to go.
Okay.
So take off.
Bye. Bye-bye.